Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. For more information, visit culturecity.org.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Eating Matters, a weekly conversation about food and food policy. I'm Kim Kessler with the Resnick Program for Food Law and Policy at UCLA Law School, and we are broadcasting live from Brooklyn on Heritage Radio Network. Joining me today's co-host is my producer, Jenna Liute, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have in the studio with us the wonderful author of the Sensation Cookbook, Good and Cheap, Leanne Brown. Leanne, welcome.
Hi.
You're also our first in-studio guest of the season.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So my voice sounds much more beautiful than everyone else's.
It's very exciting for us. We're usually like fielding, you know, policy folks around the country.
Right.
So it's nice to
people
have
in D.C. and
human sometimes. Yes.
You're going to see how the behind the scenes actually works.
I love it. I love it. I get to watch people dining nearby. So
right.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. So so some listeners may be familiar with your book. I'm actually a huge fan of it. So I have to come
obsessed.
Out.
Yeah.
a little bit obsessed. But for people who aren't, it is a cookbook that was born out of a grad school project, became kind of a Kickstarter sensation, is now being sold all around the country. And its focus is really how to eat well on a budget.
Yes.
And I want to just start out by asking you, you know, the book has kind of gone on to grow and be this major thing. And I think you've been going all around the country talking about it and selling it. Can you talk about what was your goal when you first set out on that project? Kind of putting yourself back
oh
in that
my God.
Space.
It's like hard to even remember. I was talking with someone about this recently, how almost impossible it is to even remember who I was at that point, because I was thinking very small. For me, you know, it was my grad school thesis, and I thought, great, you know, if I can just get this out to a few of the really like the people that I'd been volunteering with while I was doing my research, hoping to work with a couple of New York City nonprofits and kind of get the work out there to a lot of the families that I just met with that I knew would appreciate it and enjoy it. That was what I was thinking, you know, maybe sort of prove to a few people, look, I'm good at this and maybe you want to hire me to do something more substantial, like that kind of thing. And then when I put it out online and thousands of people downloaded it and people were starting to become interested in it, it was just like, whoa, I have not been thinking big enough. And part of that, yeah, so it's been sort of a journey of like just gaining the courage to put it out there. And I've really needed, and I'm so grateful for all the people who've encouraged me along the way and really have said, this is useful for me, because that, for me, that's the big motivator, is like, I just want to make something that's useful for people. And so to hear that it is has been like, okay, then I will do everything I can to get it out there.
That's awesome. I'm curious as to, so your thesis project, you could just do, was it like anything you wanted?
Whatever you want. It's really cool because the program, so it's food studies, which is, I'm sure your listeners probably know about it, but it is a little bit, it's I believe only about 15 years old. It's a very young program, and NYU I think is the first one. So it's extremely young field of study. It's really broad. Mm-hmm. And so people have so many different interests, and there's no sort of specific, you know, because it's not as old as something like anthropology, where they say, okay, you have to write a paper and it has to be exactly this way. There's nothing like that. So people will sometimes start businesses, people will write books or start writing a book, you know, maybe a book proposal. People do sort of wide scale projects, or they do, you know, your classic big, old, long, beautiful paper. And so I remember just shooting the breeze with a friend of mine and kind of saying like, oh man, I don't know what I should do for my thesis, and saying, you know, I wish I could just make a food stamps cookbook or something. And she was like, yeah, why don't you do that? And then I was like, yeah,
I'm going to do that.
Why don't I do that? Yeah.
Did you, when you and you mentioned in the book the volunteer work they had been doing.
Yes.
So you were, what was that work more
that
specifically?
Actually happened a little bit after I decided to pursue this as the topic. I found out about this opportunity doing grocery store tours for lower income families through the Share a Strength program. And so I did that for about a year, actually in Bushwick. I would go to WIC Center and every week, and I would work with different families, and we just go on either, there are a few different markets nearby, and we go through and we talk about sort of healthier food choices. And I always tried to make it very like open-ended, not lecture-y at all. And I learned so much from that. Not only, one of the big things that I really learned, which was validating, I think, was that sort of talking about like, oh, choose this one because it has less sodium was not super engaging. Like people's eyes would glaze over, right? Whereas when we'd be in the produce section and we'd be looking at maybe some unfamiliar fruits or vegetables, and I'd start to say like, hey, has anyone ever used this? Like, what's something we could make with this? And we could actually start talking about meals that people actually enjoyed. And then I could maybe share some different way to do it. Then we could like get talking, and then people would open up and we'd start to get to talk about actually much more important things. So it was a great way to just like open things up and really talk. And I just realized that so much of what people, you know, nobody wants to eat poorly. Like, that's just not a thing. Everyone wants to eat well, and they're trying as best they can. And sometimes just like small little changes or just new ideas are all that it takes. And that's really what I realized I wanted to share with people.
Did you get to, I know that the grocery tour doesn't entail this, but did you get to cook with anyone at that
time?
No,
unfortunately. Well, a couple times we did do little food demos at the WIC Center, but it was very like, you have to have your gloves on and everything, you know, high up people have to decide whether or not it like fits the goals of the program and all that kind of thing. So unfortunately, I didn't get to do that. I would love, and since then, as this book has come out, I've gotten to cook with all kinds of different people. It's been phenomenal. I actually just did a cooking class with a group of mostly senior citizens in Philly yesterday when I was there. And we made tacos, and we made the cauliflower tacos. And it was really funny because half the group was like, these are the greatest thing ever. And the other half was like, these are too spicy. What are we going to do? And I was like, sorry.
Never.
But it was great.
Add cheese.
Yeah. Exactly. Just douse it in cheese.
That's certainly my answer.
Add sour cream. Yeah. Add a lot of sour cream.
Now, do you have professional culinary experience, or how did you come to write a cookbook besides, you know, the thesis?
Right. So I don't actually. I've just been a home cook for, well, my whole, you know, as long as, not as long as I've been alive, because I wasn't cooking when I was extremely young.
You're like, full disclosure.
Yeah, truthfully, not my whole life. But for a long time, and it's just been always something that I'm good at. Like, it's just, it's probably the thing that I'm best at is cooking. And I can kind of see how things can come together, and I really enjoy it. And for me, it's just, it's like a very easy, natural language. It comes very naturally. And so I've always been sort of surprised, I guess, because it's so easy for me that it doesn't come as easily to a lot of people.
Right.
And so I really enjoy being able to share that. Like, there's nothing more satisfying. I remember, like, I've loved food forever. But, and I always sort of wanted to work in food, but I knew I didn't want to be a chef, like, for a million different reasons, most of which it's just such hard work. And I didn't want it to sort of ruin my love of food. And I never knew there were these other ways to kind of work in food. And I love to put food in front of people, but I like it so much more to be able to say, you know what, if you like that, let me tell you how to make it. It's actually totally doable. This wasn't even hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, you could do this yourself. And having that experience early on, like, especially with a few of my friends in college, like, figuring out how to make some of our favorite foods and then showing them how to do it and having them, like, still years later, when my friends will say, like, I made your chana masala recipe yesterday. I do it all the time. It, like, just makes me so happy.
So your enthusiasm for cooking is so obvious. And do you, with the book, have you found, I mean, you probably encounter in life, but people who don't like to cook,
yes,
you know, this conversation that you
right.
have, like, cooking's the answer for
of
making
course.
Things more affordable and making it more healthy. But some people,
they just don't enjoy it. Yeah. And there are a lot of reasons for that.
Or they don't know how to do it. Right.
Yes.
You know, I think it's one thing to grow up in a household where food is sort of at the center and you
yeah,
learn
if you have
a lot
no
of
frame
skills,
of reference for
yeah.
it. Yes. It's very difficult. So no frame of reference is obviously that's a whole different thing. I don't even think that's not liking it. I think that's mm-hmm. just not having the information
right.
yet.
Right.
And not knowing, you know, what a powerful tool it is and like not,
yeah.
It's like the box has not been opened yet. You don't know how amazing it is. But the other, well, there's a couple of things. One is tons of fear. You know, people are afraid of screwing it up. And I think that comes from a lot of different things. There's so many messages. I think, you know, I love like food TV. I'm sure we all do like watch it. It's so much fun. But there's so much sort of suggestion in the world that like you have to be an expert to cook well. And you don't.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't, especially with the types of food that we actually eat on a regular basis. Like, most of them are incredibly simple to put together. And so people will often think like, oh my gosh, if I make a couple mistakes, it's really going to be catastrophic. When most small mistakes in cooking don't matter at all. Like, you won't even notice it.
That's why I like cooking over baking.
Right, exactly. Baking, it's not that way. But with cooking, it really is like, you can either
fix it. Except for quick breads.
That's Kim's favorite.
Yeah, and then you can just chuck things in. Yeah. And so there's fear. And then, like, there's this woman that I spoke with a few weeks ago, and it was just really, she had such a funny response, because I always ask people, and they say, oh, I'm a terrible cook. So it's like, I don't like cooking, or I'm terrible. And she was like, I'm a terrible cook. And I was like, what do you mean you're a terrible cook? Like, tell me why. And she got into it, and she's like, no, really, I've poisoned people before. And I was like, oh my goodness. Well, tell me that story.
Well, maybe you are.
Well, no, but I was like, what is the story behind this? How did you poison someone? And it turned out that she had had someone over to her house. They had not told her that they had a really significant allergy, and she'd served her something and they'd gotten sick. And I was like, you didn't poison them. Mm-hmm. That was a like unfortunate situation. Yeah. That's a communication problem.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time, you know, I mean, this is like, obviously this is one anecdote of a bazillion, but I really think that's so often the case, is like, if you've had one or two bad experiences that make you think that you can't do it, you sort of give up on it.
I think that's
true
with life.
Well, it's such a vulnerability. It's, I think there's something so vulnerable about like, I made this for you. What do you think of it?
Like, yeah. And then someone's poisoned, but like, think about how you would feel.
Right.
Like, that would be
really
hard.
Or they just don't like it. Or they just don't praise it a ton.
For sure. And I think for a lot of people with kids, like, that's something you deal with on the regular.
It's also very subjective, right? It's sort of what, it's hard to find that, you know, unequivocally, like, delicious dish or seasoning or spice or, you know, amount. It's very much, well, that's actually how I cook. So if you come to my house, there's going to be lots of cheese and lemon zest, like, on everything.
But that's sort of an opportunity, too, is to, I mean, that's one of the things that I loved about, and I think in some ways why maybe it's a good thing that I don't have a culinary background, is because I don't, you know, or I don't have a restaurant. Like, no one needs to recreate Leanne Brown's dishes exactly. Like, who cares? Like, who am I? All I want to do is sort of show, here's how you make this dish generally, and then please make it to your taste. You know, make it out of the things that you can find. Make it out of, you know, your family's favorites. Like, if you really love olives, you want to like triple the olives in this, go for it. See how it works out.
I love that. It's sort of Bittman-esque, I think, in its theory.
And you talked, you know, coming back to the book a little more central, you mentioned it, you wanted to make a cookbook for SNAP users.
Yes.
So come back to that and talk about, you know, why the SNAP program.
Why that in particular.
Yeah, how you
$4
figured out $4 a day.
Yeah. Well, so that, I think, comes out of coming from Canada, where I grew up. I moved to New York to do the program. And, you know, in food studies, we're studying the whole wide food system. And Canada and the U.S. have a lot of things in common. We use a lot of the same, you know, with large-scale farming and, like, the same distribution networks and all this kind of thing. But we don't have a SNAP program in Canada. And so that was really interesting to me. And I don't know. This is almost hard to express. It's like, there are 46 million Americans living on food stamps, like 15% of the population. Mm-hmm. There's 35 million people in the whole of Canada. I just, like, I don't know how you don't sort of feel like, wow, that is a very important thing. And if there's something, and then I just felt like there wasn't enough sort of tailored for people who are on that kind of a restrictive budget. There wasn't enough that was beautiful and that was enticing, that was really not just the sort of like, oh, it's a photocopied like black and white thing with no photo. I
Nothing
wanted something
empowering.
Attractive.
Yeah.
And I just felt like there was a need there. And if I could possibly do something, like, of course I would.
So I kind of want to ask you about Trudeau.
Oh, okay.
But well, before that, how does food assistance work in Canada, and how prevalent is food insecurity?
So we don't have a food assistance program specifically. We have, of course, programs for if you fall below a certain income, you'll be given money. But we don't have anything that's specific for food. That really is a uniquely American thing.
Do you have, I mean, any data? This is off the top of your head, of like food insecurity numbers?
I believe they're close. I think it's like 10 or 11% of Canadians are considered to be food insecure. Okay. I could be wrong. I think it's a little lower than in the U.S., but
it's
not that
much lower.
I think
it's like 12 to 14, you know,
here-ish. At a given moment. Yeah.
So that's interesting. So you mentioned the goal for this to be appealing, and that's definitely one of the things that's really noticeable about the book, and that you see when people are reacting to the book, is it really seems to me to harmonize this focus on, you know, the aesthetic side of food and food being really beautiful, and maybe to some extent some people criticize that, but the sort of bougie foodie approach.
Right.
And but harmonizing that with, you know, accessibility. Have you have you felt that you were able to do that successfully? What feedback has made you, have you gotten about that?
I think I have managed to do that pretty successfully. I hope that it is a harmony of it's the sort of natural beauty of food without being like unnecessarily sort of fussy. Like I want it to be accessible and practical too. And I think there's a beauty to practical food. Like there's some recipes in there that are like kind of ridiculous, like popcorn or like put stuff in yogurt, you know, like these super simple foods. They're not, but it's just like, it's a picture of the food and it is beautiful. And maybe it is to me because I love all food and it's always gorgeous to me. But I've had, you know, I think I've had good feedback. And the other reason why it's important to have those photos is because I think it's also motivating. And we're talking about, like all of us, you know, maybe going like, I don't like cooking or I don't, that photo can be that thing that gets you through, go like, that really looks good. And you know what? It's only a few steps and mm-hmm. she says it's easy. So maybe I'll try it. Like really, like how do we kind of get people to try something? I think, because I think that once you start cooking, it sells itself. You just have to get people to try it.
So we're going to take a short break and then we'll come right back.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. This is Culture City's founder, Julian Maha.
Culture City was really born out of necessity. You know, it was born when my, currently six-year-old boy was diagnosed with autism. His name is Abram and he's nonverbal. And even though my wife and I were both physicians at the time, it was really hard for us to find any resources at that point to help him. All the other organizations out there that we know of, they do phenomenal work, but their main focus is basically finding a cure for autism. Our main focus is basically trying to prepare the community to accept not only children with autism, but their families as well. You know, in addition to that, we also want to provide help to these families in the here and now. You know, so tangible things like, you know, iPads for nonverbal kids, you know, financial scholarships, therapy scholarships, you know, art camps, and also some lecture series that can teach parents about, you know, dietary issues, you know, how to financially plan and things like that.
For more information, visit culturecity.org.
And we're back on Eating Matters with Leanne Brown.
Leanne, before the break, we were talking a lot about cooking. And I'm wondering, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, well, they think of cooking as like a privilege, a time privilege. Yeah. So how do you respond to sort of that idea that cooking's a time, you know, that cooking is more of a privilege compared to some people who might not be able to, you know, have the time? And how do you argue that it's more economical, in fact?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think your point, what you just said then, like, is it more economical? It all depends on how you think and what your resources are. And so I think, you know, for folks who are really living on a SNAP budget, it often, you know, your time
is money.
Is money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it can be, you are going to choose, you know, whether or not to use your time in that way. And I guess one of the things is I don't think that cooking takes quite as much time as people imagine it does. And it also, the other thing, so whenever we talk about these things, I always want to kind of get more at the root of like, what really is the time issue? Because I think there's time in the kitchen, which isn't often that long. But I think what takes more time is actually getting to the store, getting your groceries, making sure you have all the food available. And unfortunately, like, that's just something we have to do no matter what. Like, we always have to go foraging and getting food for ourselves. That is going to be a problem no matter what. You know,
it's
no
like
matter...
having the dishes done from breakfast so that you can start with dinner.
Exactly.
You know, it's a whole host, I think.
Yes, there's so many small complications. And so unless, you know, you work at Google and they just feed you breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're going to have to deal with that in your life in some way or another. So thinking about it, I guess it's always going to be up to the individual person and how they mm-hmm. spend their time. But I think, and then you have to figure out like how much is each thing worth to you. And you'll meet, I mean, I've met so many people who say like, oh, I hate cooking. I don't like to spend any time except for this one thing or except mm-hmm. for this thing, which really matters to me. And everyone has those exceptions of foods that matter so much to them. The other thing, every single member of the household needs to be a part of getting food on the table too. And that is something I always like to talk about. I will often have these roomfuls of people who say, you know, I really like cooking, but I find it so hard when I come home and my kids and my husband are sitting there going, what's for dinner? And we've just had the same tough day and it's like all on me. And I agree. Like, that's not right. I'm sure you guys agree too. Like, it should
We're nodding
be,
emphatically.
It should not be one person's job to get food on the table. It's just not reasonable.
But I was just telling Leanne at the break, my husband actually does cook a lot.
Fantastic.
And he... But not usually of cooking. He's got like four staple recipes. But your cookbook, he like goes for it and has cooked a lot of things out of it. So I'm glad it's encouraging some experimenting for him. But I completely agree that that's really
critical. And
kids
too. Like, and it doesn't mean that everyone has to have, you know, necessarily even an equal job, but that everyone should be a part of it so that it isn't, so that there isn't that experience of one person coming home and going like, well, it's your problem to feed us. It's like people could have at least thought, what could we have? And maybe set some things out, maybe grabbed some of the food.
Deciding what
to
eat.
Yeah.
I think it's
just
the
make it all everyone's
get
job.
Some skin in the game.
Yeah.
So one thing about the book, because it is so beautiful and appealing and has all these delicious things inside, is there, you know, did you have any concern that by talking about eating on a stat budget and this amount that, you know, a lot of people have worries that the amount's not high enough and we need to actually have more food assistance? Mm-hmm. You know, is there any concern that this is kind of validating the program as is?
I mean, yes, I do worry about that. That's probably like my deepest like fear. It's just that someone will take it out of context and think. Same with like occasionally people think it's like the $4 a day diet. Like you're saying, this is a great idea. God, no. Like that's not what it is. It's really meant as a like, this is a reality. It's not right. It actually really sucks. People should have much more. I hate that there are so many people who have to work with this or less, but it's a fact. And I just want to arm people with as much like power as I possibly can give them. So on the one hand, while I get nervous about that and maybe people who have not the best of intentions sort of taking it out of context and using it in that way, I also think that it's still, you know, I've talked to so many people who've benefited from it that I still feel like it was worth doing. And I hope that, you know, if I ever get the opportunity to refute those things, I can, and I try to say as much as possible that, like, I think the SNAP program is really great in so many ways. It was better in the 70s, and I think it needs to continue to be funded and funded better because right now it just kind of keeps people afloat. It doesn't do what it's intended to do, which is really try to pull people out of poverty.
Right.
And if it is given a bit more money, it could do that.
Yeah.
And I think this just sort of shows that.
It does actually, because it does actually pull people out of poverty, so statistically speaking, but,
right.
you know.
Not as much as it
not
could.
As much as
right.
it could.
No,
right.
and
so,
I don't want to really totally criticize it, because I do think it's actually an amazing program.
Yeah, no, and you said you came across clearly with that. Just one other thing on that, you just mentioned, like, hearing from so many people how helpful it's been. Can you tell us some of those stories or experiences you've had?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you my favorite story.
Yeah, tell us your
favorite. My favorite story is Brenda. She is this woman, this grandmother from Texas, and she wrote to me last summer during the Kickstarter. And at that point, she said, you know, I'm thrilled I found your book, and I've been looking online for different recipes. She's a sole care provider for her two grandchildren, her 8 and 10, her little granddaughters. And she was saying, you know, we're getting by on my retirement income. It's really hard. We get SNAP benefits and it's great and it really helps us out, but we still run out of money towards the end of the month. We live in this tiny town in Texas and the food pantry has stuff that I especially don't want to feed to my 8 and 10 year old girls. Like it's sugary, it's processed stuff. But we have to most months. And so I'm trying to do better. I'm starting to plant a garden, which is wonderful that she has that access
Absolutely.
To that land. Amazing. And we had this great back and forth. And then earlier this, we got out of touch for a while. She was so sweet. She told me all kinds of amazing things, but then we got out of touch and she sent me an Easter card. It was adorable. And then she sent me this incredible update and letter about what had been going on with them. And First off, of course, the girls are doing great in school and they're track stars and all that kind of thing. But then she finished and said, oh, and by the way, we haven't been to the food pantry in 5 months because we've been just cooking all the time. We are eating more beans and less meat and all kinds of vegetables, and the garden's doing really well. And we're also thrilled with our food. And I've lost 40 pounds and I'm off my diabetes medication and my heart medication. And we're just wonderful. Anyway, bye. And I was like, what?
That's amazing.
So that was like incredible. And actually, even since then, she's lost more weight. I had no idea she was even trying to do this stuff. And I think that that is just like, so, I mean, that's all like, Brenda's obviously an amazing person. But I think that's the power of like good food.
Right. And information.
It just does.
What are some of the things that you look for? Like you look to maximize or minimize when creating a recipe and trying to make it budget conscious.
So I went through so many different things. I tried at first to make these like super strict meal plans. And then I realized they were really unhelpful because if people were missing something or they found something for a different price or whatever, or they had a different family size or someone had a crazy appetite or whatever, it would all just break down. I was like, oh, this isn't good. So the first thing I try to do is make it really flexible, like really figure out like what's the core of it. And then I try to use a lot of the same types of things over and over again, because that's efficient, right? Like if you have
economies of scale. Yeah.
Well, if you have something, you want to be able to use the whole of it. Like it's not good to buy 20 different items for one recipe, just use a wee bit of everything and then have them sit around. Obviously, you're going to want to be able to use everything up. So I have a lot of recipes that are really designed around trying to use up like the bits and bobs that you end up with all the time, and trying to, you know, make sure you use the other half of the can of tomato sauce, the other half of the can of coconut milk, like whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So all those kinds of things. And then, just things that I consider to be valuable. Like this is worth the time. This is worth the effort. And, you know, some of that's, I think, a little bit my own personal taste that's going to be driven by.
What are some examples of those? What's really worth it?
Well, so people bring this up a lot, but like I suggest using butter instead of cheaper oils. And I think that's because a lot of people, though, that's like very non-standard advice for people who are lower income, though. Like just about everyone says, get margarine, get vegetable oil. But like those have no value. They're just all they do. Yes. Okay. They keep things from sticking to the pan. They have no flavor.
I wish that everyone could just see the look of indignation on your face as you talk about this.
I mean, I don't know why margarine even exists anymore, but that's another conversation.
Yes. And so butter to me is one of those things that, you don't need to use a lot of it, but it will add a lot of flavor and it will make things crisp up and get brown on the edges and just does that special thing that only butter can do. And so it's worth it. And there are a lot of little things that are like that.
Do you have a favorite recipe?
Actually, probably my favorite recipe is the one I mentioned earlier, the chana masala. And that's really just because it's like very nostalgic for me. It was one of the first. I adore Indian food and Pakistani food. And chana masala, when I was in college, there was this coffee shop where we all went as a coffee shop / had a bunch of Pakistani food. Mm-hmm. And we would always be like, how do they make this taste so good? Oh my God. And it took me such a long time of experimenting at home to figure out finally how to do it. And I just couldn't wait to share it with all my friends. And so it's just like one of my go-tos. It's magical. It's like chickpeas in a spicy curry sauce. Like it's so easy. It takes like 20 minutes and it's so good. It tastes like a thing you've been like slaving away for days to make.
Yeah. Delicious.
So it's just, that's my like quintessential ideal.
And a lot of the recipes, it's very, this book is very vegetable forward, which is awesome. And they're healthy. I mean, it seems to me.
The majority of them, I hope. Yes.
Very healthy. Was it a decision to, was it available to you to include nutrition information in this book, or was that a conscious decision to?
So it would have been a lot of fuss, but that's not really what put me off. It was a conscious decision. And it was because I find that sometimes putting nutrition information on something is like a sort of subtle signal to someone, this is a diet thing.
Right.
And that puts a lot of people off. And I just really didn't want to do that because often I think the people who are most in need of that information really badly need to see it and not have it have a label on it. This is diet food. This is healthy. It's like saying something is vegetarian to someone who is really averse to that. Like they're just not going to try it. Whereas if you say, look at this great meal, doesn't it look nice? Look at these photos. Right. Don't you just want to eat this? I didn't want to sort of get into that part. It just, it happens. We don't need to get into it. Then the other practical reason was that because so many of the recipes are so flexible, and because I suggest, you know, just put whatever you have, like mm-hmm. these types of vegetables or this type of thing, or put these additions in, that was really going to change sort of the calorie outcome and all those other things. And I was just like, is this even useful information at that point? So...
You wanted to keep it flexible.
Yeah.
I love that point about eating with your eyes, though, that we kind of have talked about how beautiful the book is, to sort of encourage people to make the recipes.
Yeah. So, Leanne, what is next for you?
Well, I am going to take a break for a little while. I'm going to run the New York Marathon.
Yeah, we're going to talk about carb loading in a minute.
And then I have a few ideas. I think. Well, so first, I really want to tell the stories of people like Brenda, like all the people who have been reaching out to me. I have hundreds of these stories. They're amazing. And I want to figure out the best way to tell them, whether that's in written form, you know, maybe like a podcast kind of thing, or maybe even videos or something. I want to figure out how to do that because I feel like so many people have trusted in me to share these stories, which are extremely important. They are... When I talk to crowds and tell these stories, I feel like the sort of stigma of food stamps is like shifting a little bit, like in people's minds a little bit. And that's so important.
In a positive way.
Yes, exactly.
When you say you feel, does anyone say that to you, or I thought of it this way, I thought of it that way?
Yeah, people say, I never knew. You know, I didn't know that you could be on food stamps and have a PhD. I never mm-hmm. really thought about it that way before. It's just like, it's not something we hear a lot about because people feel a lot of shame. And so many people that we have grown up with, like, well, we all like either have been or know someone who's been on SNAP. And, it doesn't mean anything about you, but there's so much shame around it. And so I really I met this incredible woman in Seattle who said, wouldn't it be great if food stamps would stop being a mark of shame and become a badge of honor? And I was like, yes, that would be amazing. And I don't think I'm going to be able to make that happen, but like if I could just contribute in a small way, I'd love to do that. And then I also want to do something about cooking with kids because... and something practical, not the sort of stuff that I grew up with, like 12 ways to make brownies with extra marshmallows and that kind of thing. But more like really practical because I worked with so many families and the kids often, you know, the kid who's sitting at the table and mom comes home, they say, I need food. Mm-hmm. They want to help out, but they just don't know how. And parents or guardians are not always around to be able to help, either because they don't know themselves or because they just don't have time, simply. And I know that kids are dying to help out. They know that mom and dad are struggling, you know, and they want to help. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we could, maybe a YouTube series for that age would be really cool. So we'll see.
It would be really cool. We'll keep us posted.
Thank you. Of course.
We have some potential watchers at home.
Of the marathon? Oh, no.
Marathon, too.
For anyone who's ever run a marathon, I think they can understand that it just takes over your life, like every aspect of your life. That's all people talk about. How are you carbo loading? Tell me your plan.
Well, so we're going to eat pizza after this.
Obviously.
Definitely. Yes. And then for the next couple of days, I'm basically just going to try to eat as much as possible.
I love
it. Like bread and potatoes and all that stuff that kind of makes you feel awful at the time.
Right.
But I know it's going to be worth it. It makes such a difference.
Good. Well, we'll be thinking of both of you, wishing you well on your running, and Leanne, with all of your future adventures as you go forward with this. It's really exciting to have you here.
Thank you
again. That's Leanne Brown, the author of Good and Cheap, and Jenna Liut, who joined me as co-host today. Our intern is Austin Brynjarski. Our show music is by Tim Archer, my husband. Thank you to our sponsors and to our show engineer, Liz Smith. The podcast is available on Heritage Radio Network or at iTunes and Stitcher. And you can also find us on Twitter at EatMattersHRN. I'm Kim Kessler, and thank you for listening. I walk the dog and talk to God. Everything looks so
thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.